This is going to be the greatest radio show in the history of the world.
It's going to be lit.
I got so much love for our radio program.
Bickley and Murata.
Welcome to the greatest radio show in the history of the universe.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Bickley and Murata.
You're listening to the greatest radio show that has ever existed.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest
show. I can feel it right now.
The greatest thing ever.
It is.
Dan Bickley.
The greatest ever.
Vince Murata.
You can't get excited about this. You might not be able to be excited.
Bickley and Murata.
Greatest of all time.
Legendary.
So is this show.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Right.
And Murata.
It's going to be lit.
It's the greatest thing in the world.
All right, I'm tempted to go all Dave Burns here and say it straight up 956, Vinny. 956? What are we doing on so early?
A new record. The first time Bickley and Murata has ever been on before 10 a.m.
Yeah, it is. And we are not in Phoenix, Arizona, which I think most of our listeners know by now. They're probably wondering, why are you yo-yos on the air before 10 o'clock? There's actually a reason for that.
There is a reason
for it. Because Vinny and his microphone from this portable studio in Nashville, it's not portable, but it's kind of interesting.
Auxiliary?
Yes. Yes. You're very bassy, so you can't wait to broadcast today.
I know. I couldn't
hello,
wait.
Hello, everybody.
Now I know what Cliff Kingsbury feels like.
We are coming on early today because we are going to throw to the James Jones media availability.
Yeah. You know what?
Isn't that weird?
Of all the days to have a travel day and not have a show, yesterday was that day.
I know it was.
Monday, all hell breaks loose.
Yep.
At 9:47 p.m.,
yep.
By the way.
Yep.
That's point number one. Then we get all the Patrick Peterson drama, the Josh Rosen stuff. And we're not on the air. We're in airplanes all day.
And we're on airplanes all day.
So,
just where we should have been, right?
Yeah. So what has transpired, of course, as you know, Igor Kokoschkov fired Monday night as head coach of the Phoenix Suns. A one-and-done coach. And we'll have plenty of time to give our thoughts on it. But James Jones, the general manager of the Suns, will have press availability coming up right near the top of the hour. So that's why we hit the airwaves a little bit early with cooperation from the morning show.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be able to throw to Talking Stick Resort Arena to the live press conference.
Yeah. James Jones. And so we are firmly ensconced in Nash Vegas.
Yes.
We've got one night under our belts.
At the studios of 102.5 The Game in Nashville.
Yes, we are.
They've been just tremendously hospitable in putting us up here and letting us broadcast.
And
we appreciate that.
Tremendously hospitable and tremendously inspirational. There are signs all over this radio station that says, "This is the big time. Be that good." I like it.
I like it, too.
That's a way to kind of make you feel good, you know? In Phoenix, you roll into a studio and you see Jarrett in his chest hair. Here in Nashville, you see signs reminding you.
Or 400 pounds of dust bunnies.
Right. That's right.
Which is a terrible, terrible name
for a
band.
That's right. It is. But Vinny and I got out to see a lot of bands last night. How could you not see a lot of bands? Every bar we walked into had a live band.
There's that joke where you go to L.A. and everybody, even like your waiters and waitresses and service industry people, they're all actors.
Uh-huh.
Everybody here is a musician. Let's send it now to the James Jones press conference.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for being here, for coming out, everyone in attendance. The decision I had to make on Monday, you know, was a tough one. Not something I take lightly. Separating from Igor and deciding to take the franchise in a different direction, it was tough. You know, but after evaluating everything, all the different collective factors that I had to consider as we move into the offseason, as we plot a new beginning for the Suns franchise, I just thought it was in the best interest of the franchise to go in a different direction. And so I have a ton of respect for Igor. He's an extraordinary human being, a really good coach. The wins and losses this year, you know, weren't the factor that I really focused on. It was just a collective set of issues that I thought we could improve on. And so as we move forward, you know, I won't talk about those individual things, those singular issues. I'll talk more broadly about the direction of the Suns and where we go from here. So once again, I want to thank you guys for being here. And with that, I'll open it up for questions.
Dave King, Bright Side of the Sun. Without getting into those specific issues, can you talk to us just about the timing of the move 2 weeks after the end of the season and after some other positions that had already been filled around the league?
I mean, well, it's not about what happens with the rest of the league. It's really being prudent in our evaluation. You know, the knee-jerk reaction is to just say, okay, let's get a head start on what process. You know, we wanted to make sure that we were thinking this thing through and really giving ourselves time to make the best decision for us. So there's really not a perfect time for tough decisions like this. I think the biggest thing I can say is that we recognize that we needed to make a change, and I did it.
James, Gina Mizell from The Athletic. This is going to be five head coaches in 5 years for this franchise. As a former player, how did you sort of balance the instability and the desire for stability with needing to make a change? Just I know you know what that's like as a player to go through.
I really do. And I will say that, you know, we may have five different coaches, but we're talking five different teams. This team is not the team that was coached by that first coach. And so I keep that in mind. But having stability for the sake of stability isn't something that we're into. So I just wanted to make sure as we plotted a new course for the franchise that we were able to reset and focus on our future stability. And that's with, you know, a coach, with the staff that can really embody what we're looking for. You know, a staff that will build championship habits. That will, you know, impact attitudes of our players and create an environment where our young core of players can grow and excel.
James Dwayne Rankin, Arizona Republic. Two-part question. One, obviously you got...
You love your two-part questions, don't you?
Well, I mean, hey, man, I got to get them in where I can get them in. I may not get the mic later. No, but two-part question. One, you talked... There you go, Greg. But one, you guys got a collective group with you. Bauer came in. Obviously got Bergstein and obviously Sarver. So my first part of the question is, how much input did Sarver have on the decision? And two, second part, how comfortable are you feeling now in being in that charging role where this is on me, I'm making these decisions for this franchise?
Well, to the first part, this is my decision. You know, I take a lot of factors into consideration, but ultimately the job that I agreed to was to make decisions for the franchise. And so the decision with Igor was mine, mine alone. And that's why it was a tough decision, because I truly do have a ton of respect for Igor. And then second, what was the second part of your question?
Just the fact that being in that role now and having that authority to move forward with decisions and being like, okay, I'm the guy that's going to move this franchise forward.
I mean, it's a responsibility, an opportunity I relish. You know, I think that anytime you have a chance to really impact something, you really have to want to do it. And I want to be in this role, and I want to make the decisions that will lead this franchise in the right direction. And so I'm embracing that, and I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Paul Richardson with the Sports Cave. I'm going to tag off his two-part question. One.
What, a two-part?
Yes. Do you have someone in mind that you're targeting? And two, after Hornacek and then Earl and now Igor, is it important to get a coach that already has a reputation or a coaching history as opposed to bringing in another first-year coach?
Well, I'll start by saying that with having a ton of respect for the candidates that will be in consideration, I won't go into who those people are, the characteristics that they must possess. I can speak to that. You know, we want a leader, someone that can relate to our players, someone that will challenge them, someone that will force them to thrive in a competitive environment. You know, our focus is to open it up to competition where guys have to earn their roles, where they have to prove it consistently on a day in and day out basis. They have to prove that they earn the right to wear the Suns jersey. So, and then what was the other part of the question?
Is it important to hire a coach with coaching experience as opposed to another first-time coach?
Well, I don't want to, you don't want to box yourself in. You know, of course, you know, having NBA experience as a head coach is gold. You want that. I mean, I think every team out there is looking for that. And that's a, you know, that's definitely a characteristic and a trait that's appealing to us. But some of the game's best coaches were assistants who became head coaches. You know, I played for a couple, and, you know, you just hope that you can find the right guy. So we're going to find the guy that has the right, that possesses the right traits to lead this team, and we'll do a deep dive and evaluation after that.
James Greg Moore, Arizona Republic. This will be a one-part question. So with instability over the years and with the problems over the years, what can you do to reassure fans that you're the guy and that that's not lip service, that there's not somebody above you second-guessing you and forcing you into moves that maybe you don't want to make?
Well, I mean, I can tell you that I haven't – there has not been a decision I've made that was dictated to me. You know, I've always believed that I do what's right for the franchise, and I will continue to do that. And as far as stability, you know, there is – it's going to be – you know, you guys will see. You know, the work will have to be there. I'll have to make the moves that give everyone confidence that stability is coming and that we can maintain it. But all you need to know is that that is our goal. It's not as if we go into the season or into these decisions and say, let's make a decision that's going to create more chaos and instability. We're searching for the right mix of people, the right mix of players to, like I said, chart this new course. New direction for the Suns franchise, and so that's my promise. My promise is every decision that I make will be with stability in mind.
James, Kellen Olson, Arizona Sports. With what Gina mentioned with five coaches in 5 years, are you worried about your ability to get your top head coaching targets with how short of a time frame some of these coaches have had?
Well, if you look at our team, if you look at how we're positioned with our talent, with our cap space, with the, I mean, with a, another, with our flexibility, with another high draft pick, when you have Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton as your anchors or your foundation of a team, I think that's appealing to any coach anywhere. So I'm not concerned about our ability to get the coach that we want.
Hey, James, Mark McLuhan, 3TV, CBS 5 here in Phoenix. Dan Majerle has long been a fan favorite of this franchise, and both of you were here for some good years and coaching just down the street at Grand Canyon. Do you plan to have a conversation with him about the opening?
I just go back to what I said earlier as far as candidates. Out of respect for all of the great candidates, I won't get into specifics.
Hey, Catherine Fitzgerald with the Arizona Republic. Devin Booker has talked about having more input with this franchise, and I was just wondering, what were the conversations like with him about this decision, and what input did he have?
I speak to Devin. I speak to all of our players about our organization. But in these instances, this isn't a decision for Devin to make. You know, this is my decision. And so I know our guys believe in where we're headed and decisions that we're making. But I don't believe it's the right thing to put that on a player or to have a player influence a decision like this.
Hi, Dave King again. Going to the
you should just ask a two part.
No, just one part.
I said you should have just asked the two parts your second time around.
I should have queued them up, but they're so different. You would have been anyway. I want to talk about Jeff Bauer a little bit. What were the check boxes that he filled in that got him the job over the other candidates? What does he bring to the table that you really want?
His unique experience across every facet of the organization. You know, Jeff's been a scout. He's been a coach, a college coach. He's been a GM. He's been, you know, in personnel. He's been in operations. You know, he's had to make a lot of the decisions that I'll have to make moving forward. And so his track record and experience is something that I value. And he's a person I'll lean on heavily as we continue to rebuild this franchise and move us forward.
James, Mike Pelton, ABC 15. With the changes that have come to the head coaching position over the past 5 years, what's your message directly to the fans who maybe get a little discouraged when they constantly see a new face year in and year out?
I think you can take it two ways. You can say that we're just business as usual, or you can say that we're actually searching for solutions to change it and to really make this what the fans want. And so that's my message to the fans. Although we've had instability in the past, I'm only focused forward. I'm not concerned about the previous regimes. I'm not concerned with the previous teams. You know, these players that are on this team. You know, this is their team and their future. So that's where my focus and that's where their focus is.
As far as how the team would look with the new head coach and personality character, the traits that the coach would bring, what sort of traits are you looking for in a new head coach?
If you just think about our team, our team needs to be competitive. So we look for that trait. We need to be aggressive, you know, as far as offensively and defensively. And we need to be a team, you know, not a collection of talent, not individuals, but someone who really believes that the team is greater than the individual. And, you know, so I think there's so many factors, so many traits that you can look that you can put together. But ultimately, you'll see it. You'll feel it. When you see our next coach, you'll know he embodies what we want.
When Igor was hired, he was highly touted for his player development skills. Are you still going to be looking for a similar type of coach with this young roster?
I am. My approach to player development is one where the development has to translate. You know, so you can work on all of the skills, the individual skills, the group skills, but if they don't translate, then that's not development. So the coach that we have will be a guy that's on the floor. He'll be a guy that's, you know, intimately involved in crafting our player development plans, but he'll also be responsible for making sure that on the floor these skills translate.
You talked throughout the season kind of about your plans for the summer. Now that you're in your spot officially, Jeff's on board, Trevor's still here, just has anything changed, or just can you sort of give some insight onto kind of your priorities now heading into the summer?
No, our priorities are still the same. You know, we need to add guys in their prime. We need to raise the floor of our team, and you only do that with NBA players, not prospects, but NBA players. So we'll focus on acquiring those guys via all the channels we can. We'll look towards the draft and try to add a very good young player who we hoped we don't have to rely on for production, and we'll continue to have that internal improvement and push our guys to be better next year than they were this past season.
Coach, as far as the timetable, you've got obviously the lottery, the combine next month. What's the timetable on getting the coach in? You want someone in before that?
I don't have an artificial timeline, but I do know we want to move swiftly, but we want to be thorough. And, you know, we won't rush it and try to squeeze a coach or fit a coach in a particular window. We'll take the time to find the right guy, and whenever that is, that's what it is.
James, any concerns about the budget for the coach and then the coach staff?
No budget constraints or restraints or however you want to call it. We just want to get the best coach for this team, and we want the best staff. You know, this is important for us. Like, this is a very important time in the Suns franchise, and not once have I been limited in what I can do financially, and I don't see that changing.
James, back to Igor. Obviously, could you discuss his relationship with the players? Because that's obviously a key element, and you got a younger team that's trying to figure it out. You was around him and the team a lot. How would you rate his relationship with guys?
He had a solid relationship with our guys. Like anything, you always want more. I'm pretty sure he can tell you he wanted more. But, you know, the reality is our team, we shifted focus, you know, during his tenure. When he came in, we had Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, you know, Tyson Chandler. We had a veteran team, and, you know, you fast forward later, we're a team with four rookies in the rotation. And so it was just a different team for him. I think that he'll tell you, though, that he enjoyed his time here and that he grew as a coach. And I think the players would tell you that they have a ton of respect for him and what he was able to accomplish last year.
You hinted towards free agency and obviously Oubre, a key guy that you got to figure out on what to do moving forward. Is he testing the market, or are you guys working on trying to get a deal before that?
I don't know what Kelly's doing right now. He's probably on the beach somewhere. He's probably enjoying, you know, the well-deserved time off. But I've said before, we love Kelly. We want Kelly here, and we'll address that when the time comes.
You mentioned how tough that making this decision was. Going through this process, is this the most challenging thing that you've had to deal with in your short time in a front office role so far?
I mean, I think it is one of the most challenging, but you know, I came into this knowing that tough decisions would have to be made. I just wanted to make sure we were thorough, and I think we were. And so that makes it a lot easier to move forward and be confident that the direction that we're charting is the right direction for the franchise.
James, a couple of months ago, you mentioned that if you had to put things in order of the most likely ways to improve the team this summer, you rank free agency first and draft second and trades third. Are those kind of in that same order still? Would you have draft number one now, or would you have trades?
No, still the same. You know, it's still the same. Like I said, I don't want our young draft picks to feel the pressure or feel like they have to impact winning for us. Now, I want them to come in here and organically grow into really good NBA players. So I think the best way to improve our team in the short term as we prepare for the long-term growth of our guys is to have, you know, veteran guys, NBA players who can raise your floor.
James, obviously, Monty Williams' name is out there. I know you don't want to get into specifics about candidates, but about Monty, how well do you know him? How far does your relationship go back with him?
I'll just say that I'm not getting into specifics with candidates or people or any my relationship with anyone else. You know, today's about our team, about the direction of our team, and so I won't talk about candidates.
Final question, guys.
I've touched on the qualities that made Jeff a good hire for you guys. Just in the 2 weeks that he's been here, just what has he brought already as far as ideas and things that can help you guys move forward?
Well, just you know, just. History, you know, he was in New Orleans when they were displaced and they went to OKC. So he's done a lot of work with rebuilding franchises, you know, he was in Detroit as well. His experience with Detroit, I believe when he got there, they had lost more games than any team in the Eastern Conference. And so just his perspective and his views on what really changes a culture, what really impacts a player's mentality. You know, what can we do to, like I said, help our guys develop those championship habits, you know, to develop better attitudes, the attitude of performance. He's just given us those nuggets of information that have allowed us to make the decisions that we think will help us turn this around a little bit quicker.
Thanks, James.
So thank you, guys.
There you go. James Jones holding court with the Phoenix Suns, the general manager, 2 days after firing Igor Kokoshkov as the head coach. A little bit to chew on there, Bick. Not a ton, I would say. Your first blush reaction to what you just heard?
Confused. I think there's a lot to unpack here. It's hard to sum it up into one sentence, but I'm a little confused why you're raving about Igor Kokoshkov, but firing Igor Kokoshkov, and you don't have a candidate set in your mind as to who's going to replace him. I don't understand that. Now, I do understand firing Igor Kokoshkov. I've said that all along. I see barriers. I never saw a take charge leader, and I saw a guy with a serious language barrier that would be a serious problem for young NBA players.
And you have consistently stated that during the course of the season.
Yeah, and so and I like Igor a lot. I think Igor would be a great coach in a different situation with a mature team and a real point guard. What I think is really interesting to me, Vinny, is how this story has sort of taken how it's sort of gone ablaze in the Valley in terms of people getting really angry at the Suns all over again. There's a petition out there now for Robert Sarver to sell the team. And like you said, they always work.
Oh, those, yeah.
Right? They always work.
They get people's attention on social media.
Oh, yeah. Right. So to me, I look at this and that's what I see. I see more instability, but I want James Jones to have things in his back pocket. I want him to have answers. I don't want this to be, oh, he's a great guy for the job. Let's see what he can do now. There's been way too much of that.
Confusion is the perfect term for all of this. I mean, it's specific things that James Jones said that I found confusing today. Early on, he said he wasn't interested in stability for stability's sake on the question of, oh, it's a one-and-done coach. What about stability? This is going to be five coaches in 5 years. Okay. And then later on, every decision I make will be made with the idea of stability in mind.
Yeah.
Well, you just made one that's completely contradictory to that.
Well, and you just, and on the way out, he said that he knows that all the players have a ton of respect for Igor and what he was able to accomplish last year. Well, what are you firing him for? I just, there's just so much garbage.
It didn't come down to wins and losses.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Can I tell you what confused me about it?
Yeah.
As he said that when they hired Igor, they had Tyson Chandler and Trevor Ariza, all these veterans, mm-hmm. and that's why they thought he'd be good. And then the team changed, so they're going in a different direction. But then he said their offseason plan is to bring in NBA players and veterans.
Yes. Plus, they had Igor Kokoshkov in the fold before they signed Trevor Ariza. Just let the record
right.
state
yeah,
that.
Just let the, let, just I mean, let
the biggest problem in all of this is they go through this process again, and now there's we know the Monty Williams situation has happened. He's already been granted permission to talk to the Suns. Today, Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted out that Nate Tibbetts and David Vanterpool, both Portland Trailblazers assistant coaches, they have been granted permission to interview for the Suns head coaching position.
Great. More inexperienced first-time head coaches. Yeah, just what we need, Vinny.
I don't think there's enough of importance being put on the experience factor.
Clearly.
And if you really want to go deeper, we are 357 days right now. So 355 days after he was hired. Igor Kokoshkov was the guy that blew them away last year in this process. They were convinced he was the guy to lead this team. He was the dynamic leader. He was the dynamic offensive mind. He was the innovator. 355 days that lasted, Bick. What is going on in the evaluation process before a coach is hired?
Yeah, it's a good
because
point.
Because they are swinging and missing time and time again. And I almost feel dirty saying it, but there's no other way to say it. Igor Kokoshkov, you fired him after 355 days. Horrible hire.
Yes.
What are you doing
yes.
in this process to identify these people who are going to be your coach?
I think this is a common theme here. I think that James Jones is undoing a lot of stuff that Ryan McDonough did. And I think that there was a philosophical chasm between these two guys. And I think that one guy won and the other guy got fired. And now the other guy is undoing a lot of what Ryan McDonough did. But again, it's you're right about this. Why do you not value experience number one? Why can you not come out and say, oh, because you don't want to be put in a box? I think Suns fans would thank the heavens if they came out and said, we are going to hire an established NBA head coach. James Jones is on record as saying money's not an issue. How much money is Robert Sarver paying to people he's fired?
And that's why that question about budget constraints came up.
Yeah.
About coaches.
Yeah. I mean, it's five head coaches in 5 years. I think you're right about Seven and 8 years. I think you really hit it right on the head when you said that this is something where in the evaluation of these head coaches, why do you think they're a good idea? But then again, let's go back to last year. They were all in on an excellent head coach with experience, Mike Budenholzer.
Mm-hmm.
And until they weren't. So let's see. The proof in all of this is going to be, to me, if they hire another inexperienced head coach, you will know that they are just playing a con and we're just the marks.
Well, let's just say this, too. This was what we've just experienced starting last May with the hiring of Igor Kokoshkov till right now. Has just been a colossal waste of time.
Yeah.
And I think the possibility exists, Bick, that they just figured it was going to be a waste of time. Igor Kokoshkov was, at best, their third choice to be the head coach of the Suns.
It's a good
Mike
point.
Budenholzer, one. David Fizdale, two.
Yep.
We talked about it at the time. That the commitment in terms of length of contract was not all that. It didn't instill that much confidence in Igor Kokoshkov's future. Correct?
Correct.
It might have been a one-year write-off. Let's just get somebody in here for a year, and then we'll go down. We'll get rid of our general manager, and we'll go down this road again. I'm not saying that's what happened, the possibility exists.
Well, because it does feel like a wasted year. So that to me is, and again, you've got to ask yourself, who is going to want this job, given their track record, given the lack of stability, given the perception Contrary to what Larry Fitzgerald says about Robert Sarver, given his perception across the NBA, you do not want to work for this man. That is the perception in the NBA.
Well, I mean,
unless you have power. And it's nothing against him. It's his need to control.
Well, let's focus on, if you want to bring up Larry Fitzgerald's support of Robert Sarver, and what Larry told us on Monday on this very show was, if you just get a chance to know him, if you just knew him like I knew him. Well, nobody knows him like you know him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a fact.
He's a much different entity to Larry Fitzgerald than he is to the average Suns fan.
That's absolutely right.
Plenty of Suns employees.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So what you're doing right now is they are under the microscope once again, and James Jones, I firing Igor without having a definitive replacement and going into a coaching search tells you that it was just a very, very, very bad hire in terms of what these guys are looking for. And I don't blame Ryan McDonough. Ryan McDonough hand-delivered two excellent, experienced head coaches to Robert Sarver's doorstep, and they got a deal done with neither. So where's he going to go then? So he went and grabbed a guy who just won a EuroBasket title. Okay, and he's a good coach, but not a leader of men. And it's just mind-numbing that we are going through this again. Hire somebody with some experience, please.
Ryan McDonough has been doing a lot of work for SiriusXM NBA Radio. He said this on the firing of Igor Kokoschkov yesterday.
If you get fired 11 months after you're hired and you have a young team with young players, you probably didn't have a great opportunity to develop those players and maximize them and their potential. Unfortunately, as I said to begin this segment, it's business as usual in Phoenix, and I still live here in the Valley, and people here are upset by it, but I would say they're also not surprised by it.
At some point, you just have to be better at your evaluation, whether it's your player evaluation or your coaching evaluations on determining who your candidates are going to be. It's just reached the point of ridiculousness.
It is. At some point, you've got to empower the head coach, and that's what they've never done. You can't expect Igor Kokoschkov to be a dynamic leader when you don't empower the guy.
But, so, I mean, we'll have more thoughts and plenty of time to get into this. The reaction from James Jones' press conference today and us, quite honestly, playing a little bit of catch-up after not being on the air yesterday when all this went down on Monday night. But we're also playing catch-up on everything going on with the Cardinals. Number one pick. Oh, and by the way, they have a disgruntled cornerback again, apparently, if you read between the lines. We'll get into that next. Bickley and Marotta coming to you live from Nashville here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The D-backs are now 6-2 on their current 10-game road trip. I'm Aaron Maloney with the latest from the Arizona Sports Desk, presented by MyGuy.com, Arizona's most trusted referral source. Luke Weaver continues to impress as he led the Diamondbacks to a 2-1 win over the Pirates last night. Manager Torey Lovello on Fox Sports Arizona talking about his pitcher's performance.
He's digging in when he has to. He's not backing out of any situation. He believes in all of his pitches. And when you follow that game plan and do that type of job, you're obviously going to pitch deep into games.
D-backs will be at it again tonight in Game 3 of their 4-game series in Pittsburgh. Merrill Kelly will get the ball. First pitch is at 4:05 on ESPN 620. The NFL draft is just one day away, and we still don't know what the Arizona Cardinals will do with the number one overall pick. So be sure to keep it right here for the very latest news and rumors surrounding the Cards in tomorrow's draft in Nashville. As for the rumors about a Josh Rosen trade, according to ESPN's Diana Russini, she was told that the Redskins do not have any plans to trade with the Cardinals, and it was brought to her attention that Arizona could keep Rosen on the roster and trade him later in the summer if they do indeed draft Kyler Murray. The Phoenix Suns continue to make changes. Our own John Gambadoro is reporting that in addition to the firing of Igor Kokoschkov, his entire staff has been let go as well. And the NBA and NHL playoffs continue tonight. Starting at 5 o'clock on the court, the Rockets host the Jazz in Game 5. Then later, the Warriors will take on the Clippers. And we have a Game 7 on the ice tonight. The defending champion Washington Capitals will face elimination when they host the Hurricanes at 4:30. The latest is brought to you by DC Auto Glass and Tint. Call 480-218-9000 to schedule your windshield replacement, and DC Auto Glass will give you $150 cash.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan and Vince on the road. Bickley and Marotta, live from Nashville, covering the NFL draft.
You know this song, Vince?
Yeah, I think there's a yee-haw in it somewhere.
This is a Chattahoochee.
That's safe.
Alan Jackson.
Ding dang doing there.
I got to tell you, I haven't even been here 24 hours yet. Stuff's growing on me.
Wait. Yeah, like a fungus? Yeah. Man, are you serious?
Yeah, it's Bickley and Murata outside the Auction Community Studios, not only today, but tomorrow and Friday as well. We're coming to you live from 102.5, the game in Nashville today. Then we'll be at the NFL Experience on Radio Row for NFL Draft 2019, where the Arizona Cardinals are the owners of the number one pick. But we arrived in Nashville yesterday, hit the ground running.
We did.
And just to show you, we kind of hit on it really early. We have a strange formatted show today, okay? So we started with the James Jones press conference. We went on the air at 9:56 as opposed to 10 o'clock on the dot. We're going to do the splash at 11. You'll still get your Bickley blast at noon. All that's there. But we started talking a little bit about it. But a perfect illustration of what Nashville is like. We get to the hotel, half hour later, meet downstairs, walk literally across the street from our hotel to a place that's very well known in Nashville, The Row.
Yeah.
Five hours of live music by five different artists.
Individual guitar players who had to sing and play by themselves with no accompaniment whatsoever.
And the three that we saw were all awesome. Then we made our way down to the more downtown area of Nashville. Every single place has live music.
Yeah.
Now there was one establishment we walked by, and the live performer was butted up right against the sidewalk. And you looked in, there was one person in that establishment. But damn it, that one person was getting live entertainment.
Yeah.
Everybody's an entertainer here.
I was just
thinking about the hustle that you must do, and I compared it to what I think the New York comedy scene is like. If you're an up and coming comic in New York, you're doing a set here, then you're going to another comedy club down the street to do a set there, and you're bouncing around all night long. I think the same thing happens in Nashville with musicians.
Here's what we learned. So we got up this morning, and we found out from our Uber driver that the biggest day in Nashville history, they had 150,000 visitors here from out of town. And there was this confluence of concerts. Journey and Def Leppard were playing.
Garth
Brooks was over here, and then there was some other famous...
Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Wow.
All on the same day.
Okay, so a very diverse lineup brought 150,000 people, and our driver said you couldn't even move in Nashville. They're expecting, she said, 400,000 people here.
By the way, she was a very nice lady and a safe driver. I call BS on that figure. There's no way 400,000 people are coming to Nashville for the NFL
because
draft.
She said that nobody is here today.
Yeah.
So as of this morning when we got to this radio station, there's nobody here. Nobody. We saw a couple of football fans last night, but it was mainly just people going out. And Vinny's right. Now, as a guy who's got a band, I'm obviously very, very interested in this. And I'll give you a couple of my thoughts about this. So where we started off last night, and I noticed this about Nashville the last time I was here. It's bands have a time when they get to perform, and when it's time to get off stage, they're off stage.
They don't mess around.
When you start at 7 p.m., you're starting at 7 p.m. And if you are not playing a song at 7 p.m., they'll throw you off the stage. You can't be like Whiskey's Quick or mess around tuning up in between every song.
No.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and if you're a drummer in Nashville, you're not playing on your own drum kit.
You're playing on the establishment's drum kit.
Because that expedites things.
Then last night, the first place we were at, a guy kept getting up and asking the audience to tip. This is all that the money that these artists make. Just tip them. Please tip them. And I'm thinking, and I've said it a couple times, pay them. But they don't, because the law of supply and demand is everybody you see, not everybody, but how many people have you seen with a guitar strap over their shoulder around Nashville?
I've seen more people walking around with guitars than I have seen football fans so far.
Yes, that's a good point. And so as a result, none of these bands get paid. Squat. They're just given the privilege of getting on stage in one of these places. And then hopefully they get tipped enough where
that's
they make
also a lot
of change.
Like the New York comedy scene.
Yeah, right.
Days. And by the way, the last band we saw last night.
Yeah.
They were phenomenal.
Yeah, it was really a lot of great energy.
Yeah. Mostly covers, but...
Whenever a lead singer goes from the stage and starts walking on top of the bar while performing...
on a Tuesday night.
It's generally a good deal.
You've arrived in
Nashville. Now, it's funny because the first place we went here last night was called The Row, and it said this on the menu. For over three decades, this location is where the music business has come to wine, dine, and unwind, share stories, and conduct business. This is where Brooks and Dunn were introduced, where Earl Bud Lee sold the rights to Friends in Low Places. For a bar tab. How'd that work out for him? Not very good. And where songwriting legend Harlan Howard held court every afternoon. So we were in a very, very historic kind of place last night. And a bunch of them.
Yeah. What have you eaten so far?
That's a good question. Fried pickles, fried green tomatoes.
I haven't eaten much yet.
I
had like a southern meatloaf last night.
Yeah, you had a southern meatloaf. I had a southern burger that had a fried green tomato on it.
Today, there's no doubt. I don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the day. I do know one thing I will eat because we get a tip from our buddy Zach Lynn from Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah.
Who said, go to Roberts and get the fried bologna sandwich. I'm all about that.
Okay, yeah, let's
do it. Sorry to revitalize.
Yeah, Zach Lynn, he said it would change your life, right? Called it a life changer?
It's a life changer.
Oh, good.
And I've heard it from a couple of other people, too.
How about the place that Jason Fitz was talking about when he was on?
The Biscuits?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that
place
yet.
We've got to find that place as well.
We weren't out very long last night, so.
No. Yeah. We were, yeah.
Sure.
This is a...
Wait, is there a camera in here? Yeah, can you see us winking at each other?
Is someone winking at me there, Jared? Yeah, but to me, I wonder exactly how crowded it's going to get. If there's that kind of misinformation about how many people are coming here, I wonder exactly how many will be coming here.
400,000 people.
That can't be.
I'll tell you one thing that you did luck out on is the Predators got eliminated, so they won't be that on top of everything else.
Yeah, because everything that's happening is right down by Bridgestone Arena where the Predators play. So.
Well, I had a crazy, crazy moment this morning. We're in the car and on the way over here, and Vinny's talking about the hockey game last night because he watched the ending of it. I did. I watched Damian Lillard blow up Oklahoma City and wave goodbye to him. It was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Making a half-court shot and then waving goodbye to the other team. Bravo, Dame, bravo. But I didn't. So Vinny brought up the hockey game, and... all of a sudden, this female driver in Nashville goes, this has been the craziest playoff so far. And she started rattling off all these weird things that
have
happened.
Another thing about Nashville is it's turned into a really, really good hockey team.
That was my takeaway. At that moment, I went, this place for all this Southwest expansion and Southern expansion of the NHL, this has turned into a good hockey market. This has turned into a really good hockey market.
Leave it to Colin Gillette to tweet us. Did somebody book Vinny a hotel room this time?
Ah, funny story. Funny you should say that, Colin.
There was difficulty with the location or the finding of my reservation once again.
But
not nearly what happened last time.
No, it was. I almost wet myself laughing when he told me that.
And
I
then
really
after
did.
You left, by the way, I was so frazzled by all of it. The front desk clerk hands me my keys.
Yeah.
And I put my folder back in my bag, and I immediately lost the keys. Like, before I even moved. I said to her, have you ever seen anybody do that before? She said, no, I haven't.
Oh my!
And then when I went down to meet you, I said, hey, I found my room all by myself. Are you proud of me? Things got off to a great start.
Yeah.
A little scene setter for Nashville. Join Burns and Gambo along with Wolf and Max Starks tomorrow from the Four Peaks Brewery in Tempe for our Arizona Sports Draft Extravaganza. Party kicks off at 2 p.m., and we'll take you through the entire first round of the draft. Enjoy food and drink specials courtesy of Four Peaks all night long, along with your chance to win Cardinals tickets plus autographed Cardinals gear. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. Coming up next, the latest on the Arizona Cardinals. The rumors flying around, not only about draft picks, but about unhappy players. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, live from Nashville, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. The Cardinals have the first overall pick at tomorrow's NFL draft. Live from Nashville, Dan and Vince on the road. New Whiskey's Quicker cover songs coming soon.
Yeah, it does look like Patrick is happy at the moment. Now, there was a report on a rumor that Peterson had been traded to the Kansas City Chiefs. That has been shot down. We don't know if this is a contract situation. We really have no idea what's going on. Hopefully, Patrick is at this mini camp and we get the chance to talk to him. We don't know about that. We will hear from Cliff Kingsbury. But this does show that something could be up. Remember, last October, Peterson did ask to be traded from the Arizona Cardinals. He eventually sat down with team president Michael Bidwell to hash stuff out. And Peterson said he was frustrated with the season. But this is a whole new turn. And the fact that it's happening now 2 days before the draft when they have all of this other stuff going on? A little intrigue. Maybe Patrick is just playing with us all to have a little fun with us, but there seems like maybe there's a little something there. Hopefully soon we can decipher through the hidden messages.
That's the voice of Steve Weisz, NFL Network, after another thing that happened on Monday night, not related to the Igor Kokoschkov firing. My favorite cryptic Instagram messages, Bic. They're my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I love them. I love when athletes get their message out by this.
Yeah.
Took all of his Cardinals mentions off of his Instagram account. Didn't show up at the voluntary veterans mini camp yesterday in Tempe. It's reached the point of ridiculousness now, has it not? I mean, this is a guy in Patrick Peterson.
Very mad at Patrick Peterson.
Yeah, Steve Weisz said it. You know, he referenced it that Patrick Peterson last October asked for a trade. Mm-hmm. We had the argument about it. I know you're frustrated. You're the team captain. Not only did he shut up the rest of the year, he played good football. He's a tremendous football player. At the Waste Management Phoenix Open, he grabbed the microphone at the 16th hole and apologized to everybody.
I just want to apologize to everybody for asking for that trade in the middle of the season. I'm here to stay, baby.
I'm here to stay, baby, is what he said. And I wrote a column off of that. I thought that was so profound to use that moment in that forum to apologize. What in the world could be bothering Patrick Peterson again now?
2.5 months ago that was, Bic.
Listen, you know I think the world of Patrick Peterson as a man. I love the guy. I love hanging out with him. I love talking with him. But I'm mad at him. I think this is just nonsense. And Ken Summers tweeted out that somebody in management said something that pissed him off. And you start doing this and you say to yourself, okay, look, Patrick Peterson, if you followed my narrative, my belief, because I have such faith in Patrick Peterson, my belief was that this was clearly something where he just looked at Steve Wilks and said, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And this guy is not taking me to the next level. This guy is driving us off a cliff. And that is what I thought his... And then when he came around and said what he said, I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense to me. They're bringing a new coach in here, new day, all that kind of stuff. All right. What in the world could Patrick Peterson be mad about now? It's got to be money, correct? Doesn't it have to be money?
Various people have said it's not money.
Then what could it be?
Somebody said something that made him mad, and that's how you react?
I'm not playing football here?
As a grown man?
And who could say something that could get you that mad? It's not Cliff Kingsbury.
What could it possibly be?
And what could it possibly be?
Here was Cliff Kingsbury yesterday. I asked the question, do you know why Patrick Peterson isn't here?
Yeah, it's voluntary. I communicated with Patrick and, we know where he's at. We know what's going on, and kind of a conversation to keep between ourselves.
That's funny that the term voluntary in normal NFL meaning is always in the air quotes. It's voluntary. You're not mandated to be here, but it's a really bad look if you're not here. Yet if somebody gets their panties in a bunch over something and doesn't show up to voluntary camp, then it becomes voluntary again.
Oh, right. No, you're right. It's nonsensical.
He's not required to be here.
Look, Tom Coughlin, four or five days ago, in a press conference, listed off all the guys who were not there at voluntary workouts. Named them by name.
Well, that's life in the NFL. Yeah. If you're not there, it looks bad.
Yeah, they're not voluntary. The NFL had to warn Tom Coughlin about it. Like, dude, voluntary means voluntary. You can't criticize players who don't show up. Then they're not voluntary.
Here's another headline, too. Le'Veon Bell doesn't attend voluntary workouts with the Jets.
That's a great look, too, huh?
Yeah, new team.
Yeah.
After you bellyached your way out of Pittsburgh.
Nah, I'll be that.
And sat out a whole year forfeiting $14 million and you don't show up to the first day of work.
Yeah. So if people have said it's not about money, then what could somebody on the car, who could it be that could anger him so much to say, I'm out of here? Think about this. When Patrick Peterson did this the first time, do you know how hard that was for Steve Wilks to have to deal with? I mean, that was the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of the end. Now you've got a new head coach trying to do the same thing Steve Wilks was doing, establish some credibility, and now your best defensive player didn't want to be here again?
Mm-hmm.
after they got you a decent corner on the other side and Robert Alford?
They told me to look out for tall snakes in the grass.
Yeah. Now,
he posted that picture of all of his former Cardinal secondary teammates.
Tony Jefferson, Tyrann Mathieu, Rashad Johnson,
Jerrod Powers,
Chris Johnson. Commented on it.
So, yeah, I don't...
Did you see some of the comments on it? Nothing will change.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Save, Jarrett.
They said nothing will change unless they, you know, change at the top of the Cardinals. Same old Cardinals, typical Cardinals, all this kind of stuff.
Well, when it popped up last October, you know, the Cardinals were pretty quick to shoot everything down. We're not trading Patrick Peterson, despite the efforts of Bryant McFadden, the cousin of Patrick Peterson, to get him to New Orleans. I think the question about trading Patrick Peterson has a lot more validity now. Where we are on the calendar, that this is the second instance that's popped up for apparently nothing major after those quote-unquote assurances were made. Phil Savage, longtime executive in the NFL, joined Doug and Wolf today and was asked the question, would you consider trading Patrick Peterson?
I don't know if you ever get totally fed up with that kind of talent and that kind of ability, but I certainly would be hedging my bet and getting another corner, another young corner in position, because now you have a little bit more leverage to say, okay, you know, we'd be willing to move on from Patrick Peterson at some point in time. But I don't think the Cardinals will do that. I think they take a lot of pride in, you know, guys like himself. And then, of course, Larry Fitzgerald. Those are players that are identified. Those are the faces of the franchise right now. And I would say that, you know, it's probably a situation that can be resolved.
We shall see. But I thought it was interesting, too. It was like 3 days prior to that, I don't know if you saw it, Cam Cox had tweeted out a video of him and Bruce Cooper doing an interview at a car show with Patrick Peterson. And he sounded like everything was fine. Talking about all the new acquisitions. Great to have T. Sizzle here. All of that stuff.
Mm.
So we still don't know what the nature of what made him mad, what it actually was. But it, from the outside right now, I don't see how it could be, unless it was something personal about his family, I don't see how it could have degenerated to this point.
Who would be dumb enough on the Cardinals to even say anything that would tick him off? And who Jared, when you mentioned the people who commented underneath his Instagram post, who was mentioning that it was rotten at the top, that the organization was?
Former players.
Yeah,
these are
former players. I'm not saying like random fans.
Okay.
Tony Jefferson had chimed in.
Okay. Yep.
Chris Johnson had chimed in. Another thing to keep an eye out for. We're coming to you live from Nashville as we gear up for the NFL draft.
What a sports team.
What a great city. Things are just going so good, we came across the country to do the show. The Splash, normally at 10, now at 11, is next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.